for just about everything for the outdoors. Go to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
We're always telling folks to improve their elk calling skill set. But to get better, you gotta practice. But even though we do a lot on calling stuff, we never really specifically tell folks just how to practice. Just what should the folks be practicing? What are they looking for when they practice? What should be the goal? Are there mistakes, misconceptions, or pitfalls to avoid? Are there certain things done and practiced that make a difference in styles and in quality? What calls and techniques make the most impact and why? Oh my gosh, y'all. Katie, bar the door, because this next series is going to blow the roof off. It's part one of our elk calling Geminar with our awesome guest, Tony Gilbertson. That discussion, our Elk Bros shout outs and questions from our awesome Elk Bros mailbox. So my friends, pull up a chair, adjust your volumes just right, and welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting.
Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting, brought to you by ElkBros.com, with your host Gilbert Ornelas and elk hunting coach Joe Gilley. You want to hunt elk, and they live to hunt elk. Their goal is to share with you what they have learned grinding it out for over 35 seasons doing what they love. So come on into camp and set a spell. Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunters.
Hello there, everyone. If it's your first time with us, glad to have you. Hope you enjoy the show. And as always, for our blue collar hunters following our show and grinding it out with us every week, welcome back to Elk Camp. I'm Gilbert Ornelas, the host of your show, and joining me is tonight's crew. That's right. We got the Northern Don of the Venezuelan Mafia here, Mr. Manano Graterón. And that's right. We got the legend in the house, Mr. R.C. Knox. We got the ninja, Leroy Chavez, in the house from Cimarron, New Mexico. And WWJGD is in the house. That's right. What would Joe Gilia do? Also joining us tonight is the bearded elk whisperer himself, the 2021 Men's Division World Calling Competition champion, Mr. Tony Gilbertson.
Tony!
What's up, Tony?
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good.
I don't have near as much to stroke as I did last year. I had a little accident.
Uh-oh. Did you do torching?
Well, kind of. That's how it started. I was out, you know, we went through COVID, and I couldn't go to the gym anymore. So we bought a home gym, and in the wintertime, it's cold, and so I put one of those propane heaters out there, and I bent over to turn it off one night.
Oh, no, man.
Yeah, I singed my beard, and then I started trimming away on it, and I got it all screwed up. But, yeah, it used to be down to about here.
Wow.
I saw it. I saw it in competition, man. Yeah, it's down there, man. You look like some of my folk from the hills back in the Carolinas, man.
So. Yeah. Yeah. My wife isn't all that unhappy about it. She likes it shorter, but it's on its way out. It's on its
okay.
way out.
We're going to get that elk camp beard yet, right?
That's right.
Right.
So, Tony, for the guys here and for everybody listening, you know, if they've been under a rock and they don't, you know, check out the World Calling Championships and then watch the circuit, because you actually took a hiatus for what, like 20 years from doing that calling?
Yeah, a long time.
So yeah, tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, I live in a little logging town called Vernonia. It's in the foothills of the Coast Range in Oregon here, about 40 miles west of Portland. And yeah, there's about 2,000 people over here, maybe a little more. Yeah, I've worked in public utility sector for over 30 years now. In fact, I'm retiring at the end of June.
Wow. Congratulations, brother. Congratulations. Congrats.
Yeah, 54 years old. I'm too young to retire completely, so I got to find another side gig here to get me some a little extra income.
Hey, dude, we're going to see what we can do about that, man. We're going to see what we can do about that.
I like it. I like it.
Me, yeah, you're a guy after my own heart. I'm 53, so yeah, man.
Yeah,
I'm for sure.
I'm ready. I'm ready to do something different. I'll just say
yes,
that.
Sir.
It's been a long time, but I'm an avid archery hunter for elk. I love elk hunting. It's my passion. Even more so than hunting, I love calling elk. And I started competing back in 2005. When the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation's elk camp was in Portland here at the convention center. And I took fourth place there. I'd never been there, competed before in the men's division, and I took fourth.
That's
and,
awesome. Wow.
And a couple of years after that, I went to Reno. They moved it from Portland here. And the best I could do was fourth. And I just, you know, I got out of it. It was expensive to travel back then. Shoot, I was in my late 20s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just got out of it, and right before COVID, I thought, man, I really enjoyed that. I thought to give another whirl. So I got all registered and I was ready to go, and then COVID hit, and of course they canceled it. So in 2021, they got it back open there, and I went in, and they changed things up a bit in how they judged the contest.
That was the head to head at that time, right?
Well, it's head to head in 2021. Yeah, when I went back before, they had five judges or so, and they would just score you, and it was hard to really
know where you're at.
Yeah, if you're one of the first callers up there, the judges haven't really had the opportunity to kind of tune their ears, and they might give you a lower score, and they could have some guys come up later and maybe not be quite as good, but get higher scores. It was hard on the judges. But in 2021, when I went back, they had switched to this head-to-head contest, and it was a double elimination bracketed contest. And I worked my way up out of the loser's bracket and won the men's division, which was a surprise to me. There were, I don't know, probably 30-some callers there and some darn good callers at that. But, yeah, it was, man, it was a kick in the pants. Shortly thereafter, I got an email from Dirk Durham over at Phelps Game Calls, invited me to be on their part of their pro team, and I said, "Sure." You know, I mean that you guys got to understand this is something it's just been a passion of mine for so long,
right?
And I've practiced for so many years, and to get an invitation like that with a company like Phelps Game Calls, I was super excited.
Congratulations on all of that, man. I mean, you know, just following your passion all those years, and you know, you take from what you've done in the elk woods, and you put that on the stage, and you know, and put yourself out there, and put that pressure, and you know, enjoy it while you're there, have fun while you do it. And see what happens. And man, it's so cool. And now world champion. How about that? You know?
Yeah. I was shocked. I was surprised. and you know, the opportunities that have come along as a result of that. And then of course being on Phelps's pro team. And then I will say that the one thing that made me nervous about being invited to be on their pro team meant that I had to go up to the pro division, and I was competing against guys like Corey Jacobson.
Yep.
And, Bo Brooks and, I mean, a whole host of other Rocky Jacobson, a bunch of guys that have been doing this for a lot longer than I have.
Right.
Yeah. You know, people that I've looked up to and just respected for a long time. And so the nerves were up there. Butterflies were floating around in my belly for sure.
So did that come out? Were you able to get past that, you know, or what do you do?
How do you manage?
Yeah. You know, I have to say, when I was younger, it was a lot more difficult. I mean, when I first started competing, especially when I was cow calling, you could tell I was nervous. If I was bugling, I blow so hard, you couldn't tell. But when I was cow calling, you could kind of hear the flutter in that cow call. But you know, in my career, throughout my career now for the last, I don't know, 15 years or so, I've given, I don't know how many, you know,
seminars
and I teach a class and all kinds of presentations. So I've gotten kind of over that stage fright.
Right.
I mean, I'm still a competitor,
right?
And I want to win. And
them boys put their pants on one leg at a time, just like you do.
Yeah. So, you know, I had to just exactly. I mean, I just had to say, hey, you know what? I'm just going to go in there and have fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my best. And Indeed. If I do good, fine. If I don't, then hey, the experience that I had meeting new people, making new friends.
Right.
I mean, that's really for me, mm-hmm. that's what it's about.
Yeah.
Right.
The camaraderie that comes along with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And such incredible, you know, Dirk is such a great person. I've talked to Corey a couple of times. He's just dynamite, man. I mean, everybody that I've talked to in the industry, they're all such good people, man. And if you know, Travis O'Shea and, you know, these different guys, I've never talked to Bo before, but Not I tell cool, you what, man, he just seems like he'd be a hoot, you know, mm-hmm. just like a great dude. And,
he's a good kid.
You know, and Jermaine
is, yeah, Jermaine's awesome.
He's unbelievable, man. I have so much fun with Jermaine and what I love about all the guys like that is they are who they are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize that we're all just elk hunters that have a passion for this. We're competitive as heck because that's what makes us successful in the elk woods, right? And yep. It doesn't change when you get on stage, but we are used to that elk camp camaraderie and that respect that goes along with that. So that's pretty cool that way.
Well, and you got to be humble too. I mean, there's some guys that I've met that just, you know, for whatever reason, they let this stuff go to their head, and it's not what it's about for me. You know, everybody I just mentioned, all these guys that I've met,
good folks,
some of the best, nicest, down to earth, humble people that you'd ever want to meet. You know,
yes, sir.
Yeah, let me tell you what keeps you humble, man, is I bet if I could go to the Worlds and if I was to win that and I'd be like, oh, I did that, and I'd come home and tell my wife, I'm the Worlds, and she's like, is the trash out yet?
Yeah. She'll burst your bubble.
Back to reality, right?
Ask me how I know I killed the biggest bull I ever killed in my life, and I got my butt tore up on the phone talking to my wife about it.
Yeah,
she let the air out of me really quick, man.
I don't want another
kill a daggum 350 inch bull, and she's like, "Well, I ain't bringing that. Don't bring that thing in here, man. No more horns." I mean, look, I got about 36 mounts in the house, so wow. she got a reason, man. But she tore my butt up in front of all the guys, man.
Oh no,
I had her on speakerphone. They got all hear it, man.
It was priceless, Tony. Man.
I'm standing over the biggest bull of my life, man. It was an unbelievable day, and man, she just went pop that balloon quick.
So
what did you do with that bull?
Do what, Bubba?
What did you do with that bull?
Oh no, I got him.
You did?
Yes, sir. Oh yeah, I got him. He's hanging in the. My buddy owns a bow shop there in Houston.
It ain't in
Texas
the house.
Archery.
Yeah,
it hangs in the bow shop.
That's what I wanted to know. That's what I really wanted to know.
Okay, my first bull I ever killed with Joe Gilly is hanging in my house, but my biggest bull is hanging at the bow shop at Texas Archery. So
yeah. For others to enjoy.
That's right.
She's great at eating the meat, but she's like, we got enough.
Yeah, 36 mounts in a 2,000 square foot house.
I don't think I get away with that either. My wife and I have been married for almost 35 years. We're junior high school sweethearts, and
mine too.
You know, I love her to death, but I know where the limits are.
Look, Tony, if you like me, I get the last word all the time. Yes, baby. Yes, baby.
Well, yeah, man. Tony, yeah, you can call in, man, and you go, I just won this thing. They're like, does that mean you're going to quit doing that in the house?
I do have to say, she is patient when it comes to that. I mean, I'm in the back bedroom all the time. I'm wandering through the house, cow calling. Yeah. I'll go out in the garage. I'm out in the backyard driving the neighbors crazy. One of the neighbors lives quite a ways from me, down the road, turned me into the local newspaper here. And so they called me and they said, hey, what's going on with this elk calling stuff? I said, buddy, I live right in the middle of Roosevelt country and this is what I do. And he says, well, I'd like to interview you and talk about this. This is a pretty good story. So we went through the whole gamut, you know, of my success on the stage and my hunting. And so it was fun. We had a good time.
That's awesome.
Of course, it's an honor to have you with us, brother.
Absolutely.
It sure is.
Hey, you know what? The honor is mine. I mean, this, you guys are awesome.
welcome to our elk camp, bro. This is it right here. So we try to make this just like we're at elk camp, enjoy each other's company. And I'm going to put you on the spot, because what you're going to do is you are going to blow us into our Elk Bros mailbox, because you're going to give us your best signature bugle out with a triple follow, man. So we're going to let everybody get a little bit of Tony Gilbertson here. And give you a chance to show some of that sweet butter that you put out there, man.
You just want a bugle. That's it.
Just
with a chuckle behind it.
If you were getting ready to put your last part on the stage, what would it sound like?
Wow! All
right, here we go.
All right.
This is what I do after my estrus cow call. Okay, this is my bull's calling cow bugle.
All right. Money, buddy.
That dude.
Solid money.
Buddy.
Wow.
Solid.
That'll blow us right in. Take us, Gil.
All right.
Wow.
All right, guys. Well, time to go to the Elk Bros mailbox. Chav, why don't you go ahead and lead us off, brother?
Okay. And I think Joe mentioned before, this is our first lady hunter that's submitted a question. This is from Aubrey Strickland from Southwest Washington. She says, I love the show and content. I have caught so many of your episodes and have learned a ton. So I have one question and one scenario. Question. When we are early season scouting starting in June, are we looking more for a cow sign or a bull sign? My understanding is the bulls are all hanging out together until the rut later in the summer fall time. So if this is correct, then it seems I would want to figure out where the cows are, knowing the bulls will come to find them. And you are correct.
That's right.
To find the cows, and the bulls will eventually show up if they're not already in the fringes.
Yeah, just like the Field of Dreams, man.
If you build it, they will come.
Yeah, find them and they will come, man. You know.
Okay, her scenario, my first year of 2020, I was able to get on a small herd. It was all cows from what I could tell. But I was just following some fresh poo. Then I cow called and blew the whole herd down a very steep canyon. So no elk, but I was very happy I was able to find them by tracking them. I'm wondering in that scenario if I should have waited as they were bedded down taking an afternoon nap. I had the wind in my favor, shadows in my favor, and a clear shot to a little grassy opening. Maybe I should have just relaxed and waited for them to wake up. What do you think?
So I'm gonna give you a little bit more on that, because I got her to give me a little bit more information on that. And she said that, because I was like, well, you know, there could have been multiple things that first of all caused those cows to blow out of there, right?
And what time of day was it?
Let's see.
Probably mid-morning.
It might have been, because they were going to be bed, so it was probably mid-morning there. And
Wayne, if she got close enough to blow them out, man, she really, when you get close and you smell that poo and that.
You got
to
wait in her face.
You got to listen. You got to listen, because they'll tell you where they're at.
Well, okay. So yes and no, because actually in her situation, she pulled a Joe Gillia, and I'm going to throw that out of the way.
We
know how that is.
So
she got the win. Yeah. She got the win also.
I just want her to know that he's not the only one to have felt this before, all right?
That's right.
What I want to tell most people is, like, when I first heard her scenarios here, that she went in and then the elk blew out, without any other information, I said that basically, you know, this could have been one of three things. Number one, that, you know, the elk had heard her, saw her movement, and they were already ready to blow out when she made a call, right?
Could be.
So one of the questions I asked her for a follow-up was, did you see the cows bedded, or did you just find their beds after they blew out? Now, the second thing that I was telling her is that her call, if she was that close to those animals, didn't match the situation, especially if they're bedded and they're silent, right? It's like you've made no noise. You haven't called your way to those animals. And so now all of a sudden you're right on top of them and you blow a call out there. Been there, done that, you know?
Yeah.
You blow a call at them and it's completely out of the blue, a cow they've never seen, a cow they've never heard from a place that There was no introduction in any way, shape, or form. And I'm telling you what, I mean, they're just going to blow out, right? And then the third thing that I told her to think about is that bulls are not the only ones that set a pecking order. Cows,
no, that's right.
That too.
They have a hierarchy.
Yeah. The cow. So when you come in there and you do that cow call by that other lead cow, it could be viewed as another cow that's a threat or a possible competitor and take those cows out of there. But so I was kind of wanting some new information, and she told me, here's what she said, that she was on an old overgrown rigging road, and I'm not sure what a rigging road is. You guys might.
Probably a logging road.
Okay. It was dead silent except for birds. I had been finding a lot of droppings, and the further I went, the fresher it got, so I knew I was on the right track. Then there was a bend in the road to the left was a grassy opening and piles and piles of droppings. Okay? Mm-hmm. And then to the right was a knoll, and just on the other side was a line of thick blueberries, then a drop down into the canyon. The knoll gradually went down to the same level as the road, and there were two small dug fir trees with more droppings between them. So she bent down to inspect the freshness, and she says she's never inspected that much poo in her life. It's even changing diapers. And that's when she looked up and saw a cow's back to her taking a nap right at the edge of the canyon. She could see her spine. That's what was facing her. And she was looking down the hill. She was about 8 to 10 yards from the cow, and the cow had no clue that she was there. So she backed up behind the knoll, and that's at that point, and we've all been there, that she was like, okay, I did it. I found them. Now what? So she sat there and thought for a bit, and she pulled a Joe Gilia, and she said, I realized I couldn't go around the bend or they'd wind me. The brush was too thick and dry to get through, so I decided I had two choices. Make a cow call and see what happens, or sit and wait. So I was the one that pulled that first one time. Same thing. So she tried the cow call, and about 8 to 10 of them just leaped up and ran straight down the canyon. That was that, man.
Yeah, man. So, well, she had eyes on them, man. She had them.
Well, 8 to 10 yards, right?
Yeah. Dude, she just needed to chill and hope they didn't get a whiff of her, you know?
Yeah.
She was right in there on them. That's awesome.
So let me honestly ask everybody here. And Tony, I'm going to start with our guest here. You're in that situation, and what is your play?
Well, I have also pulled the Joe Gilia, but you know, after years in the right. woods and learning from my mistakes, yeah, if you've got eyes on the elk and you've walked up to them silent, like you say, you wait and see what they're going to do. And if when they get up out of their beds, then you come up with a different game plan. But yeah, and hopefully they work their way out of that opening and you get a shot. But
definitely,
yeah, I've done that same thing. Yep. You know, I've walked into bedding areas and not known an elk were there at all, and bugled or cow called, and the woods erupt. You know, I mean, if they don't hear something coming in like that, and they know that that's not one of their herd, and you make an elk sound, yeah, they're going to bugger out.
So, Manano, what would you have done in that situation, man?
I would have called Joe. That's a pretty honest answer, Joe. If you want an honest answer, that's a pretty honest answer. Oh, yeah, no, I don't, honestly, I would have proceeded. She got a wind in her face, so, yeah.
That elk's bedded 10 yards from her?
Yeah. Well, she said she got a clear shot and she got the shadows and wind in her favor. I would have you know, it all depends if
in
she
hindsight,
was.
In hindsight, now we're saying this, right? But in the moment, in the moment.
Right. I can tell you this, but I got either sex tag.
It all depends if she's in, you like know, inside the bubble.
Oh, that's she's 10 yards away, bro.
She's 10 yards. She's 30 feet from you.
Ten yards away.
Oh, no, bro. That's a whole different deal.
She's 30 feet from you, man. I mean, you're looking at her back.
Yeah, she's at
laid
if
down.
The cow stands up, it's a dead cow, right? So
she might get it laying down if she ain't careful.
Well, but
big
old spine,
get an arrow in there.
Had the spine at her, so yeah. I think she did the ethical thing of not taking a shot right there.
For sure,
well,
for sure,
absolutely.
Yeah, but if she's you know shooting heavy arrows and she got the clear shot.
Well, I know
someone that
nobody lit. That's why he's not the leader of it.
No, of course not. But
they don't bleed very much out of the top.
Yeah,
they don't.
Oh,
they
it
don't.
Would. It's actually. I guarantee you, if you're there, you're trying to see if there's a spot to slip that arrow in, right?
Yeah, man.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. It's
yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely checking that out. And if you know the anatomy of that animal and it's quartering away, there, you know, a slight quarter, and you know what you're doing, yes, then there is. I mean, there is an opportunity with that. But, you know, once you've made your decision that you don't have a shot, now what are you doing in that situation, right?
Remember the cow that I shot in front of you, Joe? She was 64 yards away, completely quartering away. Yeah, and
you're
I shot away. Yeah, and I aimed
for the
last rib.
Yep.
And you know, trying to hit the opposite rib.
Absolutely.
And he went all the way through, but
he didn't go anywhere. Yeah. So that's
It's a hard call, honestly. 10 feet away. It's 30 feet away. It's just hard call. I don't know.
You know, Chav and I went through that scenario, Joe, where we snuck in on some elk and really got right there next to them within about 12-15 feet. And so we couldn't we really didn't want to say anything, but the bulls got kind of jinky. There was a group of bachelor bulls that were together and they kind of got jinky. And I don't know if they caught a little whiff of us or what, but they kind of huddled up like they were going to leave. And that was when I needed to introduce something, you know. But until then, we didn't say a word. We just slipped right up in there like the Mohican sneaking, man. Like we were part Indian and we walked right through the middle of a herd of elk, walked into their lives. And when they decided they wanted to move off, well, sounded like a little bull and chuckled, and they just couldn't stand that. They had to come back and see what the heck that was.
Yeah.
But had we had just, you know, standing there 12 foot away from an elk went, yeah, I mean, they probably would have blew out of there like, you know, like patting for a dance.
There's been situations where you did that with those, like with those bulls that came so close to you and Chav that there was already those sounds introduced.
For sure.
Coming to those sounds. So it's a whole different ballgame when that's happening. But when these cows are bedded and they haven't heard anything approaching, no footfalls, no broken twigs. Mm-hmm. They haven't had any type of thing. And if you're going to use any call, it would have been a calf call. If you'd used anything, a light calf call. That maybe you could get with, because calves get away with a lot. And the cows don't, you know, if they hear another calf, that might have worked.
Tony, can you show her that calf call, what it would sound like?
It'd be lost calf call, right?
Perfect.
Yeah.
And really, you need to pop just one of those very lightly, and to get the ears turned. And once they do that, then once you get the ears to turn, then they're going to stand up. But you're going to get away with that calf call way more than you are in that cow call, man.
Yeah, right?
I'd probably draw.
Then do it, and when she stands up, send it. You know what I mean? Especially if she don't have eyes on you.
Yeah.
So that's if you have an either sex tag in your pocket. I like to eat elk meat. So.
Well, she had a question about, you know, calling cows in you know, when you're just targeting cows, you know, she's mm-hmm. like, what kind of sounds and stuff that you use. And really just answered that for you. You know, you're Aubrey, you're going to want to go to those maternal instincts and you're going to want to use those calf calls. You can do a few cow mews to make it realistic in there if you want. But if you use that lost calf, like what Tony was just doing, you don't need any other sound but that lost calf, because that is why that critter's lost.
Yeah. That's the safest call in the woods.
Yep.
That's right, Tony. Yes, sir. Thank you for sharing that with us, brother.
Absolutely, man.
I'm sure it'll help her.
We got Mr. Thomas Roth from Janesville.
We know Tom.
You know brother Tom.
Wisconsin. Yep.
Janesville, yeah, Wisconsin.
Yeah. He said you talked so much about the chuckle call in the last show. Can you teach us how to make the chuckle call? Well, we got the expert here.
Absolutely.
So, Mr. Tony, why don't you show us how?
If you had to simplify it, Tony, and we're all going to, we can add to it, but if you had to simplify to tell somebody the easiest way to create a chuckle, the most basic way to do a chuckle, because a lot of guys aren't ready yet for the sound and air, and then the twit twit at the end of it and stuff like that. But if you were to tell them the most basic, what would that advice be?
You know, for me, when I first started learning how to chuckle, it was an emphasized cow call,
mm-hmm.
you know, through a tube. But I mean, at some point, this is one of the hardest calls for a caller, especially a beginner caller, to learn how to do. Mm-hmm. And then because you have to have that inhale, you know, a lot of guys, you'll hear them, you can point them out in the woods, they take one deep breath and they start chuckling with one breath on the exhale and they don't ever inhale. So, an emphasized cow call through a bugle tube and then inhale each time you exhale.
Yep. So the first one that you were talking about,
it took me a long time to learn how to do that.
That's how some people would do it without any air. And actually, most people don't do it with enough anyway like that.
Yeah, right.
You know, you usually just hear.
Yeah, exactly.
It sounds exactly fake instead of, you know, and I'll tell those people are doing that single breath to get it. If you can get away with it if you get enough on it, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So this.
Yeah, but if you breathe, it's different.
If you get that. Now, you don't get, especially if the bull's a little farther away, but the closer they get, and you get in that silent stuff, doesn't work. Okay. Sorry for interrupting you, Tony. I just want to give that example.
No, that's good. That's exactly what I was trying to explain there. And once you get that emphasized cow call down, and then you start inflecting your voice there at the end to get that kind of deep guttural sound at the end of that chuckle and inhale, you know, that takes so much practice.
It does.
And that's the key to it. I mean, once you start making those sounds and you get your ears tuned to what it should sound like, and then it's just repetition, just like anything else when you're trying to learn something.
Mr. Roth was actually with me when he killed his first bull, and we called a bull in using that really light chuckle, right?
Oh, yeah.
Not something that was really inviting to him. He came into the set twice and was like, man, this ain't right. But being a young bull like he was, it was easy to turn him around. And then when I introduced that chuckle with my bugle tube behind me, he figured, well, somebody's passed them over there. I got to go find that out. But it was really light. I mean, it was, that was it, man. And that's all it took.
You gotta be able to read the room. And you know, intensity isn't something that's appropriate in every situation.
Right.
And you gotta make them think like maybe you're headed out. And
right.
Especially if you got some cows. So, yeah, point your bugle tube the other direction and give it a chuckle. I'm sure it was.
So if you had to teach this, Tony, to somebody, what would be your basic way to tell them how to do a chuckle?
Well, like I said, I think a cow call.
All right.
And see, you can inflect your voice on the end of it, so. And then you start to inhale. And then you put that in a tube.
That's money right there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's an asthmatic inhale, y'all.
Yeah,
okay?
Yep.
And cadence is important too, right? I mean, if they're chuckling, you got to speed that up instead of just grunting. Grunting is similar to chuckling. It's just that the cadence is different.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to tell guys that are trying to learn to do the chuckle is slow it down, because when you're first trying to learn it, you know, if you don't, and that's why it's like somebody hits you in the stomach.
Yeah.
So you're just going to do that cow call, drop that jaw. Almost like a gorilla. You know, it's that kind of sound like that. But you're adding just that cow call and dropping off into that sound there. All of these elk sounds are related, believe it or not, to that cow sound. Even a bugle, it's just an inverted cow sound, right? So all of these are related in the same way if you learn the voice inflection. So the hardest part, I think, for some guys is when you're doing that and you're trying to do that inhale for the first time, don't, you know, if you don't have good fit, good seal, you know, you might start to choke a little bit on your reed. But if you're doing it, it actually helps you, because that tongue is going to contact off. So,
And what helped me was learning how to breathe while I was doing it. You know, being able to inhale and exhale all at the same go, right, and getting to that cadence. That when I first started doing it, it was just all out, and that was not good. You need to be able to breathe it in, and let it out, and chop it up, you know, into that cadence where it sounds real, you know. I mean, Joe and I were on a bull a couple of years back. This bull sounded like an orangutan, man. I mean, it was crazy, the stuff that he was doing, man. I looked at Joe and I went, man, that's got to be a hunter. No, that's a real bull doing that, man. Because it was so bad. I'm like, that don't sound like a real bull to me, Joe.
Tony, can you do a grunt and then a chuckle just first?
To tell the difference.
Tell the difference.
Sure, I'll start with the grunts first.
Okay.
And chuckle.
So that grunt is just an extended out, man.
Yeah.
Extended out, more emphasis, more volume, and chuckles usually, for me anyway,
quicker,
not as much volume.
Yeah, and to me, that grunt is not the inviting sound that a chuckle is.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, usually you get a bull worked up and he's starting to get worked, he'll sometimes do that grunt and then into a bugle, or he'll do that bugle and come back into a grunt, you know, so... Yeah,
and people, I think that something else that you focus on is that all of these elk calls, whether it's calf calls, cow calls, any kind of bull sounds, it all starts from your diaphragm. It's not your lungs. You're not blowing. You're pushing air with your diaphragm through that.
Great tip.
So,
great tip. Well, guys, you know what time it is. It's time for our bro shout outs. If you're new to our show, this is just a shout out to our followers in a few cities with the most listeners topping our charts this week, Joe.
Yes, sir. This top listening city was named after King Jorge III's wife, King George. I hope nobody made anybody mad at me because I disrespected It was and is home to many notable individuals, including Thomas Jefferson, James Monroe, William Faulkner. I love this, dude. You have all these names: Thomas Jefferson, James Monroe, William Faulkner, and now Dwayne the Rock Johnson. I just love that. Consistently ranked by national publications as one of the best places to live in the United States. And don't get confused with the place in North Carolina. This is Charlottesville, Virginia.
Virginia's in the house.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I thought that was great, man. You know, I think
the Commonwealth.
I think Dwayne Johnson ought to, you know, really feel good and put in with that kind of company, man.
The Rock. Yeah, Dwayne, get at us if you got a problem with it, man. Be like my buddy Nate Diaz. Guys, this next original city is known as Coryell's Ferry. It has been named one of America's favorite towns by Travel and Leisure magazine. Leonardo DiCaprio, Tina Fey, Gigi Habib, reside here. Okay. Lying on the west side of the Delaware River, George Washington lodged here before crossing the Delaware to invade the pursuing British army. This is in New Hope, Pennsylvania.
New Hope in the house. Yeah,
PA's in the house, Joe.
I got news for you. PA took two spots here, man. PA ticking. But, you know, Gilbert, I just had to say this, dude, because, you know, George Washington ain't got nothing on you, dude. I mean, back east, we always see George Washington slept here. George Washington slept here.
Dude, you know, slept here, baby.
Gilbert's been all over.
All I want to know is who directed Hadid.
Do what, brother?
It's actually Hadid.
Hadid.
Yeah, she's a supermodel.
Gigi Hadid. She'll get over it.
Which, again, who is that?
She'll get over it, man. Yeah. Gigi, if you need to talk at me, get at me, girl. You know where I'm at. I ain't hard to find.
Manado.
Up next, this suburb of Philadelphia, named after the city in England, was the home of William Penn's wife. William Penn is buried here. The local Delaware Valley University was named to the 2019 Best in the Northeast list and has been named a top educational institution by the Princeton Review for the last 9 years. This is going to Chalfont, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Sweet. Yeah, I'm telling you.
Some elk hunters up there, Joe.
Oh, man.
There was a kid at the contest last year. His grandpa drove him to Park City, Utah from Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Awesome.
A long way.
That's a long way.
Man, it's not going
to
be
a lot of bonding.
Yeah.
It's not going to be long that those folks aren't going to have to travel to hunt elk anymore. So
true.
That's good.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, they got some hogs over there in Pennsylvania. Man.
They do. In that farmland country, it's some big bulls.
There it is, man. Mm-hmm.
Okay, the final city is a suburb of Buffalo and was once the center of the Seneca Indian Nation. Schwabel's Restaurant is a must-stop for visitors to the area. It's known for its beef on a weck. It consists of rare, thin-cut roast beef on a kummel weck roll that is topped with kosher salt and caraway seeds, dipped in au jus and spread with horseradish. This was home to renowned NBC journalist Tim Russert, and this is in West Seneca, New York.
You enjoyed putting this, you know, strange words like you cannot pronounce that. Schwabbles? How do you pronounce that again?
Schwabbles, I guess.
Schwabbles.
That's a guess.
Schwabbles, man. Schwabbles restaurant.
Yeah.
Hey, you've never been to Schwabbles? Come on, man.
No. I haven't been to West Seneca.
I'm a foreigner, yo.
Oh, my God. I slept right next door foreigner. To it, too. I got one up on
you. You probably slept.
Yes, sir. Yeah, but I'll give you a little thing on our family, too. For one of the special things that we do at Christmas, man, is we have a ceremony where we've taken people, members of our family, close friends that have passed away, and we put their name on red bows, and then we say their names and we add them to our tree, to our Christmas tree. It's a way that we remember everybody every year. And when we first started this, you know, we were younger and you know, people weren't passing so quick, and and you know, we would, you know, like my daughter really liked a certain singer, so we put that person on there, and then, you know, people that, you know, that they were fans of certain people, and I had news for you. Chav had somebody special that he put on there, and that was who, Chav? Huh? Wasn't it Tim Russert?
It might have been Tim Russert.
It was, yeah. Tim Russert, man.
Cool.
Yeah. My goal has been not to become a ribbon on that tree.
I don't want to be a ribbon on your tree.
No ribbons.
I'm sorry.
Well, hey, look, I just promise y'all, man, if anything happens between, you know, I'll have a ribbon for you, man.
Right. We'll be awesome.
All right. All right, y'all, let's get to our main content, man. Enough silliness here. So this is our Elk Bros, and I came up with this name because it is a gem, man. It is not a webinar. It is not a seminar. It is a gem in our series. Tony is our first one up. We're going to have some other callers on. And the whole goal of this is, like we said, we're always telling people to practice your calling, right? You know, that's like you tell kids to go out and practice their basketball. But if you don't give them any guidance, man, they're going to be – they have no goal. They have no point. They have no reference. So they meander and they get lost, or they develop bad habits. You know,
they go shoot three-pointers.
Exactly. So what's everybody going to do, man, when you tell them to go practice their calling? They're going to do scream a bugle and they're going to do a cow call, right? Most of them are going to scream a bugle. They want to do that challenge bugle. You know, things like that. So it's the same as that three-pointer. They're not going to work on the things that they're weak at or try to learn more about the game that way. So even though we do a lot of stuff on this, we never tell people how to practice. So what we're going to do, and why Tony's here, is we're going to have this conversation. We're going to talk about the different things, and we're going to pick his brain on some of his thoughts on different things on practicing. This is not necessarily, y'all, like call. There's going to be some things that are going to come in that you're going to recognize as possible car strategy. But what we want to do is help direct you in how to practice, what to practice, when, why, those different types of things, right? So that you have a goal, all right?
You know, Tony, I guess for all intents and purposes, we're always wanting to practice, but what are people looking for? What are they looking for when they practice, right? What should be their goal going forward when they're practicing? What are they looking for when they practice?
Yeah, those are good questions. I guess to start with, before you start practicing, you really have to find a call that fits you, that works for you. Mm-hmm. And
so the tool, know, right? As far as
the tool,
that would be sugar.
A tool, right? Whether it be a diaphragm or a external, right? Yeah. Whichever it may be that you feel comfortable with, right?
Absolutely. And a lot of guys are uncomfortable with diaphragms, especially at first. So their go-to call is going to be an external read call of some sort.
Yeah.
So, you know, but regardless, I mean, if you're going to go with a diaphragm, you have to find a diaphragm that fits the palate of your mouth.
Right.
You got to find a diaphragm that's got the latex that suits your style of calling. And just when you're just starting out, you're going to want something that's got a light latex. It's not, you know, something that's going to be easy to make sounds with.
Yeah.
Because you get something with a heavy latex and you're going to struggle with it. And so you got to save those until you're, you know, intermediate or advanced, but so find something, and it's gonna take an investment, right? I mean, these diaphragms are what, $8 to $10 a piece now, or maybe even a little bit more in some cases. But if you want to learn how to call, you got to find the right diaphragm. Number one. Secondly, start out simple. I truly believe that there have been more bulls called in, more cows called in with cow and calf sounds than bull sounds.
Agreed.
And so, you know, focusing on those cow sounds, learn those first, and then become versatile with those cow sounds, because elk don't sound the same, right? They make all kinds of different sounds, cows and calves included. And so start out easy, and then work your way into bugling. But And when it comes to bugling, I think we've all heard that guy that goes out on the log landing and rips off a bugle, and it's the same sound every time.
Every time. So that's one thing that I want to reemphasize with what you said there, man, is that what people don't realize is that just different, you can take your volumes down, you can take your volumes up, you can shorten a call, you can lengthen a call, you can add voice inflection, the different things like that. If you know a basic cow call and the basic bugle, you can make every elk sound there is. And even
with
some
practice,
sounds
yeah.
that don't even require that. It's just breathing. So we'll talk more about that later, but
that's a great question, Joe. Especially for me as a pretty rookie elk caller. Should we start like with basic cow calls and then as soon as you build up that strong cow call, then move up a little bit to start making bugles or lost cows or what's your recommendation there, Mr. Tony?
Yeah, I, for me, cow calls are going to be the easiest sounds to make. Calf calls are going to be shorter. It's going to take more tongue pressure. And so that'll come later. But, you know, I think if you focus on those before you get to the point where you start bugling, and like Joe said earlier, a bugle is just a cow call in reverse, but you're using a lot more volume. And it all really comes down to practicing and, you know, and as Joe pointed out, making different sounds based on volume, volume of air pressure, volume and tone. And, you know, the best way to learn how to make these sounds is to mimic elk and listen to elk. And so, you know, for me, when I first started calling, and this was before they had YouTube, so I was putting in, you know, the old, Primos, VHS tapes and I ordered CDs of this guy that went out in Colorado somewhere and all he did was film elk in the middle of a rut and he wasn't out there to hunt. He was just out there right in the middle of them, living with them, and you could hear every sound that you wanted to that an elk would ever make. And I would rewind those and I would listen to those and I would try to replicate what those elk are doing.
Yeah, so, I think that's more important, even understanding what they're, how they sound, you know. I mean, we can all make a sound with a diaphragm, make it go, yeah, but what are we saying, you know? How do they really sound out in the wild? So would you recommend them, turn into an elk nut app or something like that so they can really hear what the elk sound like and what that cow call means when they use it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, YouTube is a great tool. And if you get online and you search bulls, you know, elk bugles or cow mews or something like that, and you'll get all kinds of stuff that pops up there. But yes. It really comes back to what somebody mentioned earlier about practicing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And if you practice the wrong thing, you become proficient at the wrong sounds.
Yeah.
It's not going to help you. So you really need to learn how these elk sound and practice that and become proficient at that and start out small and then start to
guidance.
Some of those other advanced or intermediate sounds that are more difficult to make.
Well, I'm going to keep that in the back of our mind. I want each of us to always think this as we're going through this is what are they looking for when they practice? What should be their goal? Because those are the things that we need to define. And when what I'm hearing from you, Tony, is if I want to paraphrase it, is what we're looking for in practice is first to be able to make the sound. But then to be able to vary those sounds so that and you can do that with different ways that you come out of your lips. You can do it with different air volume. You can do it with different things like that. And I want people, when I say one is the opposite of the other, an easy way, a basic way to think about that is that you got to remember that it's the tongue pressure.
Yep.
Towards that latex, it creates the sound. The closer the tongue is to the latex, the more pressure it puts on that latex with air behind it, the higher the tone. the more that tongue lowers away from that latex, the lower the tone. So a cow call starts out with that tongue close to the latex and coming away from it to a low tone, where a bugle is starting away from that latex and raising up to pressure. So that's where it's the opposite. You've got tongue on, off for the cow. You got tongue off, on for the bull as you're given the air. So I always want to remember what should be their goal. Your goal should be to be able to make the right realistic sounds of different length, intensity, and volume. Okay? And we can, when we talk about intensity and stuff, sometimes we use the word emotion when we do that, right? So, we can kind of keep that in, but let's keep that in mind. And since you were talking about that, since you were talking about your video and stuff like that, let's talk about other tools, you know, that, that people might need to improve their practice. And, you know, Gilbert mentioned, Paul and the elk nut. And here's the only thing that I want to tell you about that, because a lot of people will go and they'll pull up Tony Gilbertson. They'll pull up Travis O'Shea. They'll pull up Corey Jacobson, Dirk Durham, you know, Bo. And people try to make the sounds that they make, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to make the sounds that other humans are making. And what I recommend for you to do is try to mimic the sounds that animals are making.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay?
So, that's something. So what kind of things, you already mentioned videos. I mean, YouTube is priceless, right?
Yeah.
But what I've seen is people, Tony, that sometimes they're listening to a tone and I don't know if it's because some people like, you know, there's people that just don't have an ear for music.
Tone deaf.
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we're so close to our sound or to our tube that it sounds different to us here than it does to from the other end. So how do you work that so that you can work on your sound?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Joe. For years, everybody's got a smartphone anymore, and I purposely will place my phone away from, not real close, I'll place it away from me a ways, maybe 5-10 feet or so, and press record on there to record what I'm doing so I can listen back. Because you're exactly right. When you're blowing on the end of the tube and you're hearing the sound you're making from that end, it sounds way different than what it does at the other end. And you don't get those nuances, you know, you don't hear those nuances in those calls until you can play that recording back.
Yeah.
And the other thing is it's great to sit in your back bedroom and call or out in the garage like I do. But, you know, if you get outside and you get in the environment that those elk are in, I mean, right out my backyard, I'm up, you know, there's 20 acres of just timber. And I go up in there and I'll call. And the sounds that you can make up there are much different than what they sound like when you're in your house. So that's something important. And then, you know, hunting here on the Coast Range, there's so much vegetation here. There's so many trees. There's so much brush.
It deadens that sound. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So when you're practicing, you need to then, in that environment, you need to focus on more volume and projection, more air pressure to get those calls to be able to project in out of ways, because that's the hardest thing around here. People get out and bugle and they don't hear anything, and they'll go a mile thinking there's no elk around here. There could be elk just over a ridge that wouldn't hear you. Yeah. So, that's been really a good tool for me, Joe, as I've learned and I've grown in my ability, is to just listen to what I sound like once I record it, and then you can change things up a bit as you call to try to. You know, sound more like the elk that you're listening to on YouTube or some other online, you know, whether it's there's so many tools out there. There's so many people.
So, like, I mean, mentioned, it's ridiculous the amount of tools that people have now. There's really no excuse for not being able to have actual animals to listen to.
Right? Yeah.
So,
but, you know, again, Joe, getting back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, placement of these diaphragms, some people have got a really small palate, and they get air that blows by there, and they get frustrated because they're not sounding anything like an elk, right? So you've got to place that diaphragm in an area in the palate of your mouth that works for you. And I know, I mean, for me, I've got that tape back touching the soft palate. I mean, I've got it back that far. A lot of guys have got a really bad gag reflex. They can't get it back that far. So if you can't, trim that tape a little bit, but start out small. Don't trim a lot of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if that's still causing you problems, I know guys that have that diaphragm clear up against the front part of their teeth there.
Yeah.
So you just got to find what works for you to be able to produce the sounds that sound most realistic and remember that, because it all boils down to muscle memory. When you're talking about cow sounds and how you start at the high end because your tongue pressure is more and you drop off, you've got to kind of remember the amount of pressure you've got on that latex to make that cow sound. And it all boils down to practice, repetition, and muscle memory.
I want to give everybody a little tip too that, you know, is kind of built into our call. But, you know, when you look at this, if you, and I'll put it against my face, you can see these notches that are on the side. And the whole idea of that is those notches, as it gets into, and I'm trying to
adjust,
see how we can do it, it'll actually fold this down in a way so that it form fits better. You can see they'll actually come together, because what happens a lot of time, if you have a smaller palate and you get that tape going there in the back side, what'll happen is it'll crimp up because it doesn't quite fit.
Yeah.
And volume can then come through that. I mean, air can come through that, and you get that noise, and you don't get the seal. It wants to drop off all the time. And I'm not telling you have to buy our call. I just knew when I saw this, and I'll set it up against RC's shirt there so you can kind of see that a little bit. What I found is that...
Put it in your hand like this.
Oh, okay. There we go. Good idea. That's why we have you, Chav. You're the brains of the
He's the master.
So you can see how that is.
Master of disaster.
And what happens is, as it goes into the palate, that automatically folds down. Now, for years, what I would do is when I would see those creases happen in these areas, I could see those creases, and I would just take scissors and just cut a V-notch in there so that it would do the same thing. And then when I saw Travis's calls, I was like, there's somebody that understands that. And you get much better seal the way it goes up into the mouth, and it doesn't let that air pass through like that. And a lot of people that have to trim, I think, happen because that pushes that tape out in different ways. And a lot of times if you do those notching in there like that, and you don't have to be an expert, just put it in your mouth, see it, and then pull it out, and you can see the creases in your tape that start to form, and just V-notch those right out of there so that you get a better fit. And that'll help you a ton with calling. I think it's a really huge point to have to help you out in that type of situation. So you have that seal and you don't have that air going by that Tony's talking about.
I normally have to cut all mine, right? Like I grew up in calling elk with a Primos call and a Primos Black, and I have to shave that call. But I love the call, right? But I have to shave it because it's too big. So when I started using this call is a lot smaller. You see there's no creases on that. That call's been blown for over a month, and there's no creases on it at all, right? So it fits really well. And I can shove that thing in there and put it in just about any spot on my palate. But, again, I have a lot more experience than the first-time guy, right? This is a much tougher latex, so it's harder to blow. But when you go back to something that's soft like what we're using with sugar or the grinder, these are so much easier because you don't have any of that air going by at all. It really seals it off, and that latex is soft.
And if you were to if you were to compare those two calls, the grinder and the sugar, and what Tony was talking about earlier between soft latex and thicker latex, the call that if you're a beginner you want to work with is that sugar. And it's thin so that you get those sounds very easy, but you got to understand that is not a call to be screaming bugles on, because the thinner the latex, the sooner you're going to blow that latex out. Okay.
2 days.
So,
yeah. So Tony, besides the wrong placement on the palate, what other possible mistakes, misconceptions, or pitfalls do you want to avoid when you're starting off?
Well, I think, you know, not like I said earlier, practice is key, right?
And right.
Just like guys picking up their bow a week before hunting season, a lot of guys,
exactly.
A lot of guys will pick up their calls the week before the season.
Yeah.
And try to go out and call elk. And you can't do that. I mean, if you want to become proficient at this, you have to practice. So that's one thing. You know, we just talked about, not having a diaphragm that fits your palate right. And there's all kinds of, there's so many diaphragms anymore. There's several companies that are making, diaphragms that have different frame sizes now too.
Yes.
You know, Phelps has got them, Carlton, like they've got several different sizes now. So find, and it's going to cost some money up front, but find that call that fits your palate and stick with that.
Right.
I see guys, you know, I got buddies that practice on their way to work in the car and they leave their calls in a hot car and then they come back and want to know why their calls aren't working. Well, that's
or they chew tobacco and do it, you know, so.
Yeah, I've had plenty of guys that chew tobacco that they've got.
That'll wreck a call quick.
Oh, yeah, definite pitfalls for sure.
Yeah, yeah. But, like I said earlier, don't be a one trick pony. You know, learn to be versatile. Learn how to make different sounds. And Joe hit it right on the head earlier. You know, you don't have to necessarily, if you get used to calling a certain way with a certain volume, you can put your hand over your mouth. You can turn your head. You can put, you know, the sound into a bugle tube. Just, you know,
you can
practice
parse your lips. You can open the side of your mouth. You
absolutely.
Can, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, all that stuff. So like I said, don't get stuck on one call. Become more versatile as much as you can. And then when you become more versatile, you need to learn how to have more control and be real smooth with those calls. You know, you can tell a hunter from an elk based on that alone, you know, not only because they're calling the same way every time and and maybe they can't chuckle, but, you know, you can tell that their call is real choppy. It's not smooth, you know, and those elk, especially cow sounds, they've got a real smooth texture to it. So become more versatile. Practice will get you there, along with that control that you're going to need to make those transitions from cows to calves to, you know, a big bull to a young satellite bull or a spike bull or anything like that, you know, so.
Grinders tuning in, thank you for listening to the Blue Collar Elk Hunting Podcast. Our goal is to share our knowledge and help you flatten that learning curve so that you too can have some of the very same incredible experiences that have given all of us here at Elk Bros a lifetime of memories. If you like what you hear or see, you can get all of this information plus so much more from our Basecamp Elk Hunting Training Camp, the first in a series of online courses from our Blue Collar Elk Academy. Our Basecamp Training Camp allows me to use my coaching style and share almost 40 years of elk hunting experiences successfully hunting elk on public lands, as well as over 20 years guiding hunters of all ages and experience levels. This course will be like nothing you have ever experienced in concept and structure, using success-based coaching techniques that will elevate your confidence and skill sets. Our camp will prepare you specifically from that final moment most in your control, those final minutes or seconds the elk is in front of you, backwards through each step and level, allowing you to see, visualize, understand, and relate every coaching point to what lies ahead, the next step, the next thought process, the next success. Because y'all, you've already been there. You know what it looks like. By tapping my 30 years of teaching and coaching experience, our camps are developed considering multiple learning modes with text, visuals, audio, as well as video. And Basecamp will benefit those new to elk hunting all the way to the 10 to 15 year vet. So if you are looking for that one thing to help you fill that tag this year, invest in the most important piece of equipment there is, you and your elk hunting knowledge. You can find the Blue Collar Elk Hunting Academy and the Basecamp Training Camp at elkbros.com. That's ELKBROS.com. Keep dreaming of the screaming, believing in achieving, and most of all, keep grinding. I want to throw this out there right now for all of our listeners to hear this, is that I am telling you that your lack of success in the Elk Hills is 80% going to be your ability to call
properly.
And
speak the language.
Yeah. The language. To call and to, and what I have seen, and we've coached people, we work with people all the time. We have people show up that are proficient shooters, man. They're in the best of shape. They have incredible gear. Their bows shoot fast. They shoot accurate. They have all of the tools, but they're not able to create an opportunity. You know, if you're not able to call and create your own opportunities, then what you are doing is you are hiking and hoping an opportunity is going to happen.
With a bunch of weight in your shoulder.
If you hunt with Joe, you're going to be hiking.
That's going to be a hike.
But the difference is, and I tell people all the time, the difference is when me and my wife shop in Walmart, okay, when we shop in Walmart, she can be walking in the aisle
next to
5 feet, yeah, 6 feet over from me, and I can walk through that friggin' store. And if we don't come to an area where we see each other, or I can see her down the aisle or something like that, I would think that she's not even in the store, right? But I can get in that store, and I can yell, Loretta, and she's going to come to me pretty quick. It might be a little mad as a wet hen, but she's going to come, right? So my point is a lot of times we go through woods hiking and hoping, and we have elk in proximity that we could bring into us that we don't, because we don't call or know how to call,
yeah,
or we're not, or we're putting things out there and that aren't realistic, or all they're doing is location bugle, go location bugle, go location bugle. So I'm just telling you, man, I can't emphasize enough of everything that you do. If you are not working all year on your calling to become solid in that skill set and learn as much about that as possible, and it does, you don't have to know what those animals are saying as much as understanding the emotion, like what you were saying before, you know, understanding, being able to read the room. Yeah. How is that animal reacting? What is going on? What is being said? That's why I don't want to sneak up on 20 cows that are bedded, that aren't saying a word, and go up there and go, meow! Right?
Yeah. Like somebody farted in the room.
Yeah.
Loud.
You know, I had a hunting partner years ago, and he didn't call at all, and he was a spot and stock guy. And when I started calling, he said, you're going to scare all those elk away because you sound too big. Well, I got news for you. There isn't a human on this planet that has the lungs and the diaphragm big enough to sound like a real bull
elk. Yeah.
No, it just, you can't. So I don't buy that. So that's something else I think that is a misconception. The guys get, when they do start getting more proficient with calling, you know, they're afraid to challenge that bull.
Yeah.
And for me, and like I said, you know, reading the room, try to emulate what those elk are saying and what they're doing. And that goes not only for the sounds, but the volume.
Right.
And if that bull's screaming at me, I'm going to punch him right in the face. I mean, yeah, I'm going to scream back at him as loud as I can. I'm going to sound like the biggest, baddest bull on that mountain. And that to me is going to challenge that bull. It's going to piss him off, and he's going to turn around, and that might be enough to make him engage and come in.
So let me ask,
like you said,
Tony, before you, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
But are you more cow or bull oriented?
You know, for me, it depends. It depends on the time of the season,
mm-hmm,
and the day. You're right. But you know, if it's early pre-rut, early in the rut, I focus more on cow calls. Man, when they're rutting, I'm bugling all the time. I mean, I'll cow call and I'll calf call, but I predominantly will bugle. And I bugle a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what I've done. That's my strategy. I've called in a lot of bulls.
And I'm going to ask you something about your bugling, because, man, you sound so incredible on stage, and everybody hears it, and everybody wants to do a lip ball, right? How many times do you really use a lip ball out in the woods?
Almost never.
Yeah.
I mean, the only time I do that, honestly, Joe, is if I've run through the gamut of everything I know that isn't working, then I'll throw that at him. I mean, that's just another tool, right? Yeah, I mean, I'm going to try it.
Right.
But no, I mean, you don't need to. You know, if you can, I find that if you can get that high, really high pitch and really aggressive tone, the lip ball, it's not necessary. It's for me, it's something I do on the stage because the judges want to hear that. And I mean, you know, the lip ball, I guess when you hear a bull, especially that bull calling cow's bugle, that they've got that raspy tone to it, that's supposed to kind of replicate that some.
Right.
But like I said, I mean, I don't hardly ever do, you don't hear it that often, honestly, in the woods.
Yeah. I think we use it a lot, Tony, in scenario type things when we're trying to put on our own show to bring, you know, doing elk things to bring animals to us, because that's one of our techniques and styles. Mm-hmm. And I have used it. Again, it's got to be just one of the tools in the toolbox. It's not something that you're just going to throw out every time. And I've used it in a situation where I actually had to slow a herd down because, you know, so I'm using it as just that short display, you know, bugle to slow those cows down a little bit, in hopes that they're like, oh, maybe we got a better suitor, a better H class bull. But like you said, it's hard to sound bigger than a bull.
Because if you've ever been really close to one that's a really full grown bull and he's hit you right in the face, I mean, it will jar your soul, brother. I mean, it resonates in your body. It's like, oh my God, there's no way you can sound like that. No. I've tried. I mean, you can't blow hard enough, you know, or have that guttural growl. It's like, I mean, it's like a Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know, breathing at you, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's right.
I absolutely dig it, though, man.
Oh, it's awesome. Wild, it's awesome. I love to hear it. But yeah, Jill, I mean, I go with what works. If I'm just bugling and I'm not got any lip balls and they're responding to me, that's what I do. If I can't get them to respond, I'll throw that in there to see if it's something that'll turn them on. But other than that, I don't use it that much. But
Tony, do you have any special sounds control techniques or tricks that you try to do?
I'll tell you, I was talking to Joe about this before, but there was an area that we used to hunt, and a lost calf call to me is something that, like I said earlier, it's safe. It's not something that's gonna, you know, scare the elk off. They're not afraid of it. That's one call that I use a lot. But, you know, there's a lot of sounds that you can make that elk make that doesn't involve one of these calls. Stomping on the ground, raking trees, breaking branches, kicking. I mean, I'll go up and find an old rotten stump and just start kicking it and panting through a tube and growling and grunting and groaning, all that stuff that they do when they're trying, you know, in that whole breeding sequence, you know.
That just, you know, think about one of us when we're frustrated, you know. Yeah. The sounds that come out, we don't always talk. It's kind of like, oh, God, you know. They get frustrated the same way, man.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, splashing around in a wallow or a creek.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, elk are not quiet when they go through the woods. So,
or go wallow in one.
Go lay down in a wallow.
Oh, no. Is that a story for another time?
That's another story. We'll talk about that. First time I run into this guy in the woods, I'm going, oh, my God.
Rolls over in a piss wallow.
Yeah. Oh, he was
so
bad.
It
was bad.
You know, we get something here when it's dry in New Mexico. I don't know if you've ever experienced it because you're pretty damp in your state, but when we're really dry the bulls will create a piss wallow. They'll have an area that they just urinate and roll in. Well, I'm a scent freak and a sound freak, you know, as far as I'd like to get through the woods. And if I found one of those, I was rolling in it, man. So, you know, you go into McDonald's.
He's getting better,
like that,
though, Tony.
Back into camp.
Yeah.
He's getting better.
For 10 years, he wouldn't let us have a fire in camp.
Now we have revealed.
We went four bulls out of five in one deal, and he's like, well, I guess we got to have a campfire now.
Yeah, now it's a tradition.
Yeah.
I used to do that.
Whoa, these guys, man.
I used to. Hey, no,
yeah,
I,
it is, yo. You know too. That.
I ran into some guys that were from La Grande, Oregon. I was over in Eastern Oregon hunting one year, and these guys, they'd go up, they'd set up camp a month ahead of time, and they'd stay up there all month long. And, man, I'll tell you, they wore the same clothes every day.
Oh,
they
wow.
They cooked bacon and sausage and eggs and everything first thing in the morning inside the tent. And I mean, they smell. You could smell them coming a mile away. And those guys killed bulls every year.
Yes. Yeah.
You got to have the win, right?
You got to play the win, baby. You got to play the win, baby. Right. If you don't play the win, you ain't winning.
If you're a loser, you smell like a bear, you act like a bear.
I'm just going to put this out there. I'm just going to put this out. I'm just saying, look at the scoreboard. That's all I want to say.
I'm saying the same thing.
Uh-oh.
We had 6 inches of snow, brother, and we had to have a fire for survival, yeah. Right? So, and we all mashed them that
but
year.
For
so Joe's like, well,
listen,
man.
My thing on scent is this, Tony. Here's how I feel. I think elk are with scent the way they are with sound. So, you know, elk live around places that are populated, and they'll walk around houses. They smell the scent all the time, right? They understand, and they know the difference between, and they can smell, they can actually see the distance in their smell, like how close a human is to them or how far away they are. And
yeah, how strong it is.
The less that scent is, the more the less tolerable. Alarming it is to them. It's kind of like, and the way I've always said is that, you know, if we're walking through the woods and we hear a gunshot go off, you know, a half mile away, we're like, oh, did you hear that gunshot? But if we hear a gunshot go off 50 yards away, we're friggin' hitting the ground, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I truly believe that there's no way that we can fool an elk's nose. They're going to smell us. If we don't, we got to play the wind. However, yeah. I have been in situations where, because I've been as scent-free as possible, that it has mitigated
for sure.
That alarm so that it gave me seconds, and sometimes seconds is 10 yards to be able to get a shot.
Right.
So I just think that the more I want every advantage. I want every advantage. So, I mean, you could have a creaky bow and pull it back at 60 yards and kill a bull too, but try to do that at 15 yards.
Yeah, 10 yards.
That's right.
Yeah, it's so I want to make sure that I try to eliminate any possible failure points. And if that means that I'm real anal or about things like that, it's just been, for me, it's the details that sometimes make the difference, right?
Yeah. No, sure. I think you're right, Joe. I mean, I've kind of been that way in the past too. I mean, we don't have piss wallows, but we, you know, I certainly find where they've pissed in the dirt, and I'll kneel in it and rub it all over
too.
Yeah,
man.
But you know, a lot of guys focus a lot on the scent away.
Yeah, I want to smell like nothing, unless it's actual elk scent. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. But you get out there.
I'll use pine trees and stuff like that sometimes.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I do that too. But, you know, you start walking around out there and start sweating. I mean, you're going to have odor. You're going to smell like
right.
Yeah, man. Especially on day 5 or day 6 and you ain't had a dadgum shower.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, it's rough.
And look, if it comes down to that situation and you're in that situation, again, yeah, if you're a good hunter, you can play that wind, man. I mean, and still kill that animal. I've seen guys go out there that have been smoking for 6 days, smell like a trucker, and they able to get it done. But when it comes down to sometimes possibilities being lost, I mean, I try to make sure I do everything that can get there. So,
yeah,
that's kind of my goal, man.
Tony, do you have, like, when you first started out calling elk, I mean, I know it was a different day back then, but if you were somebody who was just starting out right now, where would you go to learn or, you know, make the best use of your time to get better sound results? I mean, would it definitely start with YouTube or some of the apps that are out there that we can get on our smartphones so we're understanding the sounds we're going to make and speaking the language, right?
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it started with YouTube, but there's, I mean, look at all the courses that are out there now.
Yeah.
And the apps. I mean, I know Paul's got one. You know, Phelps has got videos all over Jason and Dirk. Corey Jacobson has got Elk 101 and that whole outdoor school, which is, you know, awesome. I've watched a lot of that content. You know, the other thing I think to keep in mind is that, you know, we've all got our own experiences, right?
That's right.
And everybody's got an opinion, and you got to find something that works for you. So I think as much as you can do to research the various tools that are available to you, do that, you know, and YouTube is free. I mean, there's so much content on there. I mean, people post stuff all the time. So that's a place to start. And then, you know, if you want to register or sign up for these other courses, that just gets you deeper and starts to explain more in detail, you know, maybe more than what you can just from guys talking on YouTube. I mean, you've got experts who've been doing this for decades, you know.
That's
And I respect those guys. I mean, they've got just a wealth of knowledge, and take advantage of all of it. If you want to be successful, take advantage of all of it and just practice. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. If you want to be good and you want to become proficient, you have to put in the time.
Yeah.
And it's all about repetition.
You have a certain amount of time that you practice weekly, or do you segue time into your day, drive time, or do you have anything like that where you feel like you're more fulfilled in your practice? For me, I have a lot of windshield time in my job, so I keep a couple diaphragms in my vehicle at all times, and so I'm always playing with with an app or listening to somebody on YouTube and trying to mimic that sound, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, after hunting season, I'll take, you know, a couple months off and probably not do much. But, you know, then I get the bug, and especially if the wife's out of town, I've got hunting videos on the TV, on the big screen, and I've got my bugle tube and my diaphragms, and I'm sitting back in my easy chair, and I've got a beverage, and I'm just, for an hour, you know, I'll watch videos, and I'm not so much focused on the guys that are hunting these animals and the sounds they're making.
Right.
I'm listening to those elk, and I'm trying to mimic what those elk are doing.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a 45-minute drive to work every day.
Yeah.
And
me too.
And I'm going to Big Sky here in a few weeks or a couple weeks now, I think it is, to compete again. And I've got my calls. It's every day, it's multiple times a day. I've got my diaphragms with me on my way to work. I'm cow calling, I'm bugling, you know, and all of that stuff is just, it is so important if you want to become proficient at calling in elk and making elk sounds like elk make.
Yep.
Well, Mr. Tony, are there certain things that people can do and practice that make the difference in the styles and quality based on your knowledge?
Well, I think guys need to, you know, you got to kind of develop your own style and find that diaphragm that will fit that style. Like I said, you know, I've got a wide palate. I blow hard. And in fact,
you're a what?
I'm a blowhard. I was
thinking
about it. You can't take him anywhere, Tony.
Oh, man.
He gets the show off the rails.
I've been
focused. Unleashed here.
I was able to catch that one, even myself.
That was a slow pitch, right? Is that right, Bill? Huh? Slow pitch? Yeah, I've been focused so much on saying controlling air volume and air pressure and staying a blowhard, and look what I just did.
No, it's all good, brother.
I blow these diaphragms. I use a lot of air pressure, and I'll blow those light latexes out with a loose stretch on them. I'll blow those out.
Me too.
Easy. You talk about a day or two, and they're toast.
Toast.
So, you know, I actually... Phelps is coming out with a call special for me and a couple other guys, and so I like a call that's stretched real tight. So when I'm talking about finding that call that fits your style of calling, you have to figure that out. And if you use more volume and more pressure to get that call to work, you're going to have a tighter stretch, a thicker latex. And that's first, I think that's the most important, you know, to figure out before you really start to practice. And then once you got that, find the placement that fits you. And then it's, like I said, it's all about repetition. It's all about practice and that, and developing that muscle memory that it takes to put that diaphragm in your mouth and be confident. You know, you can't go in the woods with trepidation and you know, not being confident in your ability to call those bulls in, because they'll know.
And understand that that's going to be a dynamic journey too, because as you depending become a better caller, you know, you're going to be able to call with different kinds of latexes and stuff, because Tony, you know, you can throw a call in your mouth and that's a thicker latex and get things out of it that most people would just struggle with, where, you know, as people grow, they're going to get better and grow into that. And I'll just tell you this too, that to your point of things being different, a call doesn't even sit in my mouth anything like anybody else. It's almost crooked in my mouth the way it sits, you know. But I've learned to, you know, it's kind of like Larry Bird, how he shot, you know.
Yeah.
It looked ugly, but he did it so much, he was very good with it.
Yeah, I still can't swing a golf club as bad as Charles Barkley did, but I think he got it all fixed now. When I first started calling, I'd hunt with Joe so much that my cadence even sounds like his, right? There's a whole, so when you hunt with somebody and you've been taught by somebody and you've mentored and stuff like that, they're going to sound a little bit like you, you know. So when Joe and I are in the woods, we sound a lot alike, you know. And I only know that because Joe or because Chav or RC will go, oh man, that sounds just like Joe, you know. Even some of his double bugle stuff like that, I've picked up those cadences that you do, and I've heard it in our brother Luis, you know, so you hear his cadence and it's a lot like ours. So, now you're starting to see the progression of the calling, I would say scenarios that are the same, not identically the same, but the cadence is the same. And some of those tones are a little bit alike. Like
that. And that's
the rhythm.
That's why I think it's real important that callers, after they get, you know, when we talk about the goals and where you want to go, right, what you're looking for. Again, we're looking for realism, and part of that is can you change that voice? Can you change that rhythm? And so can you listen to elk, or can you play the parts of three different bulls that have different rhythms, different lengths, different intensities? Maybe one is more of a, you know, like a blowhard like Tony, or is a butter like Jermaine. Because if you've ever listened to Jermaine, or you've ever listened to Travis, they're very smooth when they go into it. You know, it's just kind of like you hear a bugle in the wind, almost smooth like that.
No wasted motion at all.
And can you, you know, can you do that? Can you sound like different rhythms? Because one of the things I like to do when I put on a show, when we do scenarios, is I like to use three different reads to sound like a different voice. But in doing that, you can't throw a different voice in and throw the same cadence and the same call. You have to make it sound different. And so listen to a young bull. Listen to a herd bull. Listen to other satellites and what they're doing, and mimic. So where do we want to go? What's our goal? Our goal is to be able to do those different sounds with different intensities, lengths, volumes.
Yeah. You know,
that's the goal, to be able to sound like different voices. Okay.
You know, Joe, I find that when I try to coach people in calling, they get frustrated really quickly because they can't sound like I can, or they can't sound like a bull can. And it really, I mean, I wish I knew how many hours I've put in over the years to call. So, I mean, start with something like you said, your sugar that's got a really light latex on it, doesn't take a lot of pressure. Once you get that down, then start increasing the stretch and the thickness on that latex. And you're right. I know a lot of guys that carry several different diaphragms in their pouch because they think, you know, they get different sound tonal qualities out of them. But you can, again, if you develop that muscle memory and you know where to position your tongue and the pressure you need, you can use one diaphragm and sound like a young bull and a mature bull. So and here's something else to keep in mind, because I know there's still some out there. You know, stick with a single latex. There's some doubles out there. There's some triples left, but
yeah.
You know, those are really hard.
Yeah.
So start with
like
a single. Yeah, start with a single. Start with something light, and then progress from there once your skill set, gets you to that point.
So yeah. I think where when I do the different reads on mine, Tony, is that, like, I can have some reads that just the stretch is not going to go to a certain tone. Like, you take a Carlton stretch,
mm-hmm.
you take a Native by Carlton stretch, man, he gets that high pitch top on it. Yeah. I mean, just like that. Whereas, like, when I blow my grinder, especially when I'm doing cow calls, it's going to sound like really a more mature type cow. And that's where I see the nuances in that stretches, especially if I'm doing cow, you know, calf type stuff when I'm doing that. But I've done it for bulls as well, just because of the stretch, you know, and I'm trying to think, there was another one that, I was doing one with Slayer the other day. So I threw a Slayer, I threw a Wapiti River, I threw, Native by Carlton, and each one of those had a different stretch on it that gave just a different feel and different tone, right?
Yeah, man, it's almost like a singer, tenor, and a baritone. I mean,
yeah.
It's just different, you know, how they come out on those latexes.
Yeah. Now, if
interesting.
You can tongue stuff up, but man, there's a point where you try to take a latex that's not made for that pressure, it ain't going to get to that pitch. I don't care what.
Right.
No, that's true. Right. That's true.
So, Tony, what are your go-to calls that make the most impact during the pre-rut, rut, and post-rut?
Well, I think as far as pre-rut goes, I focus more on my lost calf calls and my cow calls. And again, with the cow calls, I'm changing those up. I've got lost cows. I've got more mature sounding cow sounds that I make. You know, younger cows. It's just a whole variety. So you're sounding like a herd.
Right.
Can we hear a couple of those, Tony?
Sure.
Awesome.
Gotcha. So a sequence like that, you know, pre-rut, and then, you know, once they get in the rut, like I said, I will always, especially walking into the dark, if I'm trying to locate an elk, a bull, I will always cow call mm-hmm. because it's safe, right?
Right.
You know, so that's the first thing. If I can't get a response from that, then I'll rip off a locate bugle, and don't generally chuckle. Just a high pitch locate bugle to see if I can't get something to respond. And,
can we hear your locate bugle?
You betcha. Just something short like that.
Love how it dropped off. Yeah.
And if that doesn't work, then I'll rip another bugle off with chuckles in it. And so you just, you know, it just all depends. I let the elk tell me what I need to do. You know, I mean, if what I'm throwing it out there isn't working, then I'll throw something else at them. And, you know, that during the rut, like I said, I do more bugling than cow calling, unless I set up and do some kind of a calling sequence. And when I do that, I'll stay there for a half an hour.
Yeah.
And I'll go through
5 minutes. Yeah.
I'll go through a calling sequence. And I'll just wait and listen, and I'll throw calf calls, I'll throw cow calls, I'll rip off bugles, I'll do panning, I'll stomp, I'll rake trees. I mean, you name it. I throw the toolbox at them, and then I sit there and wait and I listen. You know, and
so like elk listening. Doing elk
what are you listening for, Tony? What are you listening for? Let's say this is early season. What are you listening for?
Early season. Pre-rut especially, I'm listening for hoofs on the ground.
There we go.
Tripping over rocks, tripping over, you know, breaking sticks.
Yes,
going through the slough brush over here. You know, if I'm in an older clear cut, those bulls slipping through that reap rod, I mean, they'll be on top of you and you won't even know it.
Like that, silent.
Yeah. Yep. So you have to sit still. You have to listen. I can't tell you how many times early on in my hunting career that I'd go through a calling sequence like that. I'd sit there for 10 or 15 minutes. I'd get impatient and I'd get up and I'd walk, you know, 15 yards. And
yeah. Boom, there you go.
Bull standing there staring at me. And I'm like, you know.
So would you say the earlier the season, the longer the length of that calling sequence needs to be? Patient in it?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I've sat there for over a half hour listening because, they might be coming from a half a mile away from the next canyon across the way there. And they don't always, especially early on, they don't always necessarily just come running in. They just kind of come slipping in, trying to figure out what's going on and sniffing and very cautious. So you got to be patient. And that's one thing.
Remember that video? That's what you're describing there.
She walked right up to him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you something else too. I've had, especially, once you get later on to the rut, you start calf calling, you get that lost calf call, and you call those calves to you. A lot of times, those cows and a bull will follow that calf.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's how Luis killed his first bull.
Yeah, you got to be careful. I mean, so don't ever think that lost calf call isn't worth, you know, keeping it in the toolbox.
Mama, Papa's going to show.
Absolutely. That's why I show that video because I remember Joel saying that's how it works. He said, okay, if we got a calf, we're going to wait for Mama or Papa coming behind him.
Yeah. So, no, that's true.
We wait a little bit.
Once we get through the rut, you get into post rut. I'm still going to bugle. I'm not going to do a whole lot different. I do believe that those cows that weren't bred during the rut will come back into heat, and so those bulls are going to be acting much the same way as they were during the rut. So even coming out of that rut or post rut, I think that's important to keep in mind too.
And thing to remember with that is that we are moving and listening for one of those cows that wasn't bred that's going to come back in estrus to cause a rut, right? And then that rut ends up bringing satellites to that rut, and it ends up bringing hunters to that rut. Well, you can be that rut. You can bring elk to you by being that rut. They're listening for those things. Exactly.
For that.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. That's why I say that calling sequence is important even after the rut. Yeah.
So is there any kind of a call that you fall back on?
Yeah, like are there certain calls that you always that ends up being like the ones that you fall back to all the time, or it ends up being like your core stuff?
Yeah, my lost calf call is something I'm always going to do. And these Roosevelts that we hunt do a lot of grunting and a lot of chuckling. They won't even bugle. You'll just hear this, and that's all you hear. It's just, that's it. And so, again, because I'm trying to emulate those bulls over here, that's what I will oftentimes, that's what I'll go to. And just, it's not something, it's a call that a lot of hunters struggle with. So if you can perfect that call, a lot of times that'll trigger those bulls and they'll come in with just a light chuckle.
Yeah. It was very effective for us last year. Early in the season.
Every year it's like a different button sometimes.
Different hot button.
That you got to push. And it seemed like, man, last year seemed like the light chuckles were really, because I think those bulls just never really got going for a little while. So that light chuckle is a little more inviting, less intimidating, type of thing. So I think that's key.
Something I haven't really talked about is as much as external read calls.
Yeah, there you go.
I can't tell you. I mean, you can't make the same sounds with a diaphragm as you can an external recall.
That's nasally.
That's really that nasally whiny. Tone. If those diaphragms aren't working, I've got a couple different diaphragm call or external recalls that I carry with me too. So when diaphragms aren't working, bugles aren't working, then a lot of times I'm surprised actually by the response I get from those external recalls.
Just that change, and they've got that good volume, and a lot of times, like you said, a lot of times we call too light, and we think because, you know, the way we're calling with our mouth there that it's louder, but that external gets out there and it gets that nasally, you know, sound. Yeah.
It gets that hyper call to him, man. And
that greeny weenie, like man. That greeny weenie.
That green weenie's amazing. It's like, whew, it sets the world on fire. And RC uses an older one called a hyper call. And I'm telling you, man, when he hits that thing and nothing else is working, he hits that thing, then bulls can't take it, man. Yeah. It's just real raspy and real. I don't know, you know, they call it a estrus buzz or something like that, but at the end of the day, it's just what cows do. I think they make that buzz sound whenever they want to, you know, not just when they're in estrus, you know, it's different. And the only way I can really mimic it is with an external.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's something else that I think is important. You know, we've talked a lot about diaphragms. We talk a lot about bugling, but when you're talking about a complete toolbox, I don't think you go out in the woods unless you've got one or two of those in your pocket, too.
Yeah. Yep. Hey, Tony, I mean, we've been going on here for a while, man, and I tell you what, this has just been solid gold, man. I think we'd like to have you back again another time.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay. Talk about some things. And,
as we get closer.
I want to thank you for kicking off this series because –
this Geminar.
Yeah, man. Our Geminar, man.
I love it. This has been a lot of fun. You guys are just a kick in the pants, man. I can't imagine what your elk camp is like.
It's a lot of fun.
It's pretty fun, bro.
You can't wear your feelings on your sleeve. I promise. Check that shit at the door. but we do, man. We have a blast, and we love, like you, very passionate elk hunters, passionate about our sport, passionate about our brothers, passionate about coaching and teaching. Guys like you, you know, grace us with y'all's presence, these world champion callers. We learned so much from you guys, so we can't thank you enough, Tony.
It's been an absolute pleasure and honor. I was so excited when Joe reached out, and this has been a blast. I can't thank you guys enough.
That's awesome, man.
That's awesome.
Thank you, bro.
Guys, if you like what we're doing, please subscribe, rate, and review us. You got to go to Apple Podcast or iTunes to review us, and you can be sure to include your name and where you are from to get in on our drawing so we can spin the winner wheel. Right, Joe?
Absolutely, spin dude. The
winner wheel. And you guys can check out more elk hunting content at elkbros.com. And just a reminder, if any of our listeners would like their questions answered on our show, just send your questions to info@elkbros.com. That's info@elkbros.com. And like we say down here in the Lone Star State, husbands, kiss your wives, wives, kiss your husbands, keep your broad head sharp and your powder dry. And we'll see you next week right here on Blue Collar Elk Hunting.
Tony, thank you, man.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tony.
I learned a lot.
And for all our grinders out there, here's some more music from our other brother, Tony Windtrip, to close out the show.
Tony! Peace, everybody.
Peace out.
Hey, thank you, guys. It was fun. I appreciate it.
I make my living working east of town. Late nights in the summer till the sun goes down. I can't stop thinking about how my life's changed, but I'm still the same as I was young. I peeled them bark trees one by one, made a couple of dollars, built my gas tank once, and I left my high school, barely made it by, but I found my way back. Oh, how time flies in the Northwest wild. Hunting, fishing is my kind of style. I float the Wainuchi when it gets hot. I'm proud of all the things that I've got. I'm digging them moss back up in the sand. And after work, a cold beer in my hand. drinking my buddy's homemade wine, living Northwest wild. This place has changed and it ain't for the good. There's a bunch of new faces in my old neighborhood. And the logging market goes up and down. There used to be a little export in this booming town. I fill my freezer from the river and the woods. Kick it back with my old man. Yeah, my life is good. Living Northwest wild. Fishing is my kind of style. I float the wine near she when it gets hot. And I'm proud I own the things that I've got. I'm digging the moss bags up in the sand. And after work, a cold beer in my hand. Picking wild berries off God's land. And drinking my buddy's home. Ah.